Welcome back to the Chasing Freedom Show with Noah and Jeff. Today, I've got a very exciting guest from you guys. My good friend, Jen Hudson, is going to share her journey of how she went from having a plan of taking down self-storage to taking down not one, not two, but three deals in just 5 months, totaling over 45,000 square feet in self-storage. Jen, welcome to the show. Jen, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, I'm really excited. I mean, we kind of just hit it off. We met at the Bigger Pockets Conference down in New Orleans, is how you're supposed to say it. and, you know, I got to know a little bit of your journey, and immediately after hearing your success and how, like, willing you are to just jump into something, I was like, man, the listeners need to hear from you because I feel like your story is really inspiring. So why don't we start with why you got into real estate?
Okay, well, thank you for that. Thanks for that intro. And I would say that I got into real estate. I can't necessarily say just me because it's definitely a team effort, but, I personally got into real estate, just really this past year, if you want to consider it that way, after COVID and, my husband and I should preface that we own a couple CrossFit gyms and that was very, you know, a trying time for us for sure. And it definitely caused me to reconsider my positions within the gym and to figure out like what I was truly passionate about and if that really was working within the gyms, because, you know, fitness is my passion, in the sense that I am passionate about exercising and mm-hmm. health for myself and for other people, but I don't necessarily, I came to realize that it wasn't what I wanted to be doing with my career. And I really wasn't sure what I wanted to do, but we had some success with, our homes, our, you know, our personal residences and things like that with real estate. And, it interested me. So I went down the route of getting my real estate license just because, you know, I wasn't sure where it would lead me, but I thought it would be beneficial in some capacity, if not just to learn.
Yeah.
And so from there, I, you know, just started reading every real estate book that I could, listening to Bigger Pockets podcast, that kind of thing, and happened along an Instagram post by some pretty awesome people, Jay Scott and Ashley Wilson. Mm-hmm. And they were hiring for an investor relations position, and some of the qualifications they were asking for were similar things that I had done for our gym. And it spoke to me and I just like put it out there. I didn't think there was a chance in hell I would get a job. But I ended up landing the job. So I work remotely for them in the multifamily space. And that kind of opened up a lot of, you know, I guess just learning experiences for me and networking potential. And during that time, my husband and I had also just been trying to figure out what we wanted to do in real estate. We were originally thinking mobile homes, and just because of, you know, a lower barrier and barrier to entry. And I read the book Profit Like the Pros from Ken Corsini. Mm-hmm. And I'm laying in bed and I came across storage, a story by Stacy Rossetti. It was basically like her best deal. And I just turned to my husband and I'm like, you need to stop what you're doing and read this, because this is us. This is what we need to be doing. And it helped that my husband's mother and her husband own a storage facility themselves. So it's in our family.
Yeah.
We had a little bit of experience and we were like, if she can do this, like, why can't we do it? And a couple weeks later, we pulled the trigger on a coaching course from her and, you know, here we are.
So what was it about that story in that book that resonated with you that said, hey, this is where we need to be? What drew you to that?
So for me personally, and I don't know if my husband can agree with this or disagree, but, COVID really drained me in terms of, how do I say this? In the gym business, the political relationships that started driving wedges between, you know, like personal decisions with, you know, COVID, I guess I'll stop there with that. But I think you can probably understand where I'm going with this. But I was looking for something that was a little less relationship driven.
Yeah.
I liked the aspect of the automation potential and not having to necessarily have like a personal relationship with our tenants. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they're essentially like metal boxes. So not to dumb it down, because there is quite a lot that goes into business. It.
Yeah.
Yes. But, you know, I liked the aspect of not necessarily having a having to have, you know, those types of long-term relationships with our tenants. That was appealing.
And what an interesting comparison that you just made between your businesses in CrossFit and everything like that, right? A lot of that was probably dependent on you, right? So if you step away, could they continue? Probably, but would they struggle? Also probably, right?
Yeah.
Versus self-storage, you step away, it's completely fine. It runs, right. It operates, it keeps going, and it can go on infinitely, which is really the definition of freedom, right? You're able to step away from something and it continues to bring you money. So I can see why you wanted to make that transition. And one of the self-storage scares me only because I was really interested in it until I became really good friends with like AJ Osborne's acquisitions manager, Brian. And like, I was like, Brian, we should do a deal. We're looking into it. And then he was like breaking down all these metrics and he pulled out this iPad with like this app that they built. And they're like, hey, look at the storage per capita in this city. And this is why we don't build here. And I'm like, I don't got to look at any of that for a flip, man. Like we find a good deal, we turn it, we'd sell it. So kudos to you for going into an industry that, what I love about it though, is that I really do feel like self-storage is, it is based on the income you're able to produce, whereas for like flips, it's not, right? So the flip is the end consumer determines the price point and really the market determines the price point. I can't just go sell a house for $700,000 because I think that I did a good job on the rehab. Whereas for you, you go be an excellent operator. You put in awesome management systems. You market to the right tenant basis. You fill up your facility. You get to charge more in rents. And all of a sudden you've doubled the asset's value and you can turn around and sell it or pull cash out or whatever else you want to do. So why don't you walk us through your first self-storage deal? Like, I'd love to hear the details on it.
Okay. So I would love to. Our first deal was honestly a couple weeks after we started our coaching program. So the process for us, I was pretty much in charge of, and still am in charge of acquisition. Mm-hmm. So it's a lot of cold calling and Google Maps searching. I walked you through a little bit of that one time. And it's a pretty... primitive method, I would say. And the reason for that is because a lot of the type of mismanaged facilities we're targeting don't have Google listings. They don't have marketing. They don't have websites. Some of them do, but a lot of them don't. They're all mom and pop owned. And so, you know, it requires a lot of back end work. And so I honestly, the very first call that I made, which is crazy, ended up being this deal. It's in Titusville, Florida, over on the East Coast. And the owner had originally wanted to sell. It was on the market, but they didn't sell. So they pulled it off the market. And I spoke to the manager and she goes, actually, you know, the owner may be interested. So I'll give you his information. And I called him and he was game. So that very next day we drove over to the other coast and looked at it and got under contract. The facility itself, let me pull up my notes here because I don't know it off the top of my head.
No, you're totally fine. I'm curious too. Like, so as a failed listing, did it fail because he was overpriced?
You know, I actually don't know. I think maybe it just fell through for one reason or another. I think he had it under contract. Actually, he had it under contract and then that fell through. And then he had like a verbal agreement with one of his tenants. And he was just kind of like dragging his feet. Mm-hmm. So it ended up not working out. And we came through with an offer and he was like, all right, well, the other guy's out. So it's about 12,000 square feet of flex warehouse spaces. There's 8 1,500 square foot units, and they're occupied by various businesses, automotive shops, things of that nature. And then there's about 8,400 square feet of self-storage, mini warehouses, and then there is RV and boat parking as well.
I love the idea of renting to like those small businesses. I feel like, one, there's an extreme shortage everywhere for small business to be able to rent, you know, I'm imagining it's got like a roll up door and they can pull cars or trucks in and out or like boxes. Yep. So it's great for like anyone that has a shipping, an e-com store, the shipping goods or whatever. Right. So yeah. That's so interesting. What does that facility rent out per square foot? Or is it different for each, like, cause you've got different tenants.
It's different based on the tenants. And honestly, we, as I mentioned, it's mismanaged. So we have tenants at all different types of rates.
Really?
Some people who are like grandfathered in from day one, which is absolutely insane. Some people who are, you know, top of the market who have just recently moved in. So it's kind of all over the board. And we are doing kind of a stair-stepped approach to get people up to those rates. There's a lot of different, you know, theories out there about how you raise rates. And we have some value add strategies that we wanted to implement prior to raising the rates. And we're working on that right now. So we have all new tenants are at much higher rates than the current tenants, but we have not raised rates just yet on anybody.
Nice. Okay. And what was the acquisitions cost on that property? What did you end up putting it under contract for and purchasing it?
So we got under contract for $1.37 million. We used an SBA loan. Mm-hmm. The cool part about SBA at that time is that they were offering 3 months of no payments. So our first 3 months of mortgage payments were waived, which was a great opportunity. You know, it was extremely incentivizing. But it allowed us the opportunity to build a little cushion in our savings for that, just, you know, for improvements and things of that nature. Because it was our first storage deal, we were required to put 30% down, which was, you know, a big chunk. We have a partner, and we both each split 50-50, the 30% deposit or down payment on that. It was also the reason for that is because at the time SBA had an expense ratio that they were requiring, mm-hmm. And they wouldn't consider the flex warehouse space as part of the income. So we had, which is strange. I don't know why. So we had to finagle it so that the parking was considered. So the rate, it had to be 51% of the property. So they considered the self-storage and the parking as over 51%. But with that, with being able to do that, they required a larger down payment. The interest rate was 4.3%. It's on a 25-year amortization period. So, you know, it was a good chunk of us, you know, of money for us to put down, but it cash flowed from day one. So
yeah,
you know,
when you took it over from it being improperly managed, what was it bringing in per month?
I honestly don't know off the top of my head. Uh-huh. It's about like a 15% cash on cash return. So,
nice.
You know, we actually are just making our first mortgage payment the other day. And I asked my partner, I was like, what is our mortgage payment? And we had to like dig through some papers to figure that out. But yeah, the cash on cash return is good for us. We typically target like a 20%, or above. And once we start implementing our value add, you know, we get people raised rates and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
It'll be great.
You know, one thing that always has interested me as far as self-storage goes is the eviction process for people who don't pay. Can you walk, can you walk the guest through what that looks like when someone becomes delinquent as a tenant at a self-storage facility?
Yeah. So it varies state by state, which is the confusing part. And so we opted to belong to the Florida Self-Storage Association and utilize their, terms and, you know, conditions and guidelines just to make sure that we're abiding by that. And truly I should know this off the top of my head. I don't know the exact dates. But we have, you know, they're delinquent after day one. We give them, I believe it's 10 days. And again, don't quote me on this. I believe it's 10 days before we start a lien fee. So we can start adding lien fees, I think at 10 days or it could be 7 days. And from then they have, I think by the 15th of the month, we can start the auction process if we choose to do so. And there are companies that automate that, you know, like that you've seen on Storage Wars and things like that. They've kind of like, you know, made that whole situation kind of famous, but honestly, I want nothing to do with that. I don't want to own anybody's stuff. So honestly, I would really rather get the money from the person, try to work out something versus going through the auction process, or just send it over to that company, because one, we don't live close to it. It's almost a 2.5-3 hour drive with traffic to get there. So I don't want to have to go over there if I don't have to. And it's really just best if we can automate that or resolve the conflict from the person. And typically, honestly, so far, we've been able to resolve everything. It's just been a matter of like, oh, I was out of town, I didn't get my email, my card expired, or whatever the case may be. Mm-hmm. We've had really great luck so far. So knock on wood, hope that trend continues.
Yeah. What about this area of this first facility attracted you to it? Like what metrics did you define or see where you're like, hey, this would be a good spot?
Honestly, when we were just starting out, I wasn't following any specific metrics. Mm-hmm. I was just calling anybody and everybody. And truly, I think with these types of like secondary, tertiary markets, it's kind of like, you know, get your reps in and get something under contract, determine later if, you know, during your due diligence period, if the metrics make sense. We were lucky, and honestly, we're the, you know, exception to the rule. I don't think it's very common to land a deal on your first call.
I don't think I've ever even heard of anybody being that, you know, having that happen, but you got to take action and you don't know what's going to happen.
Exactly. So, I really like the Titusville area because it's, you know, the Space Coast. It's also, really attractive to, especially just kind of Florida in general, it's very attractive to snowbirds. Mm-hmm. And also given our political climate here, a lot of people escape other areas to seek that. So we have a lot of people who are travelers, with RVs and things of that nature. So that they need to park it. I liked the area, especially because it's kind of near more rural areas, but it is still in the city. And, a lot of the areas surrounding have like, surrounding neighborhoods have, rules and regulations about what you can park in the neighborhood, extra stuff that you can have. There's a lot of apartment complexes surrounding. So a lot of people don't have the storage that they need. And the other thing that we're experiencing a lot too, is that, a lot of the apartment complexes won't allow commercial vehicles to park there. So people who have small companies like, you know, air conditioning or, you know, window tinting or, you know, whatever the case may be, if they have like a commercial van or a commercial truck, they can't park it there. So we have a lot of demand for, just vehicle parking in general, not even just RV parking.
Interesting. Yeah. Yeah. What a cool way. Like you think about like the cost or your return on investment to be able to store someone's vehicles, you know, especially if you're talking, it's just parking, right? You're not providing covered parking or like fully, you know, whatever, weatherproof, waterproof parking, whatever. But how interesting, like you're just renting out a parking stall and someone's willing to pay for that.
And it's crazy because I get probably like 5 to 10 calls a week for spaces and we don't even have room. That's part of our value add strategy right now, is we're reorganizing the parking spaces to, you know, make it more efficient and maximize the potential there.
What do you charge for? I mean, I don't know what metrics you're using, but I mean, what do you charge for someone to want to store an RV there for a month?
The current cost is $117 a month, but we could be charging well over $160 a month and still be very competitive.
Is that part of your strategy, is to be a little bit more of an affordable option to keep your occupancy higher?
Not necessarily. We just haven't raised rates yet. That's what they were charging prior. Yeah. And we'll continue to raise rates as necessary, but we're full right now. And I don't necessarily want to be 100% full. I'd like to be more in like the 90 to 95% and then start, you know, with dynamic pricing. The fewer options we have available, the higher the price goes.
Yeah.
So
what break it down for me a little bit more, some of your other plans to, you know, fully utilize everything in that space as far as, you know, maximizing your pricing, you know, making it, you know, perform at its peak performance. What are some other things you're going to do?
So we're reorganizing the parking right now. The cool thing about this facility was that the previous owner, was a contractor and he owned a concrete company. So he set up all of the plumbing and concrete work for phase two in the future.
Oh, wow.
Because he was planning to expand the storage units and the flex warehouse spaces over the parking area. Mm-hmm. So if we ever decide, you know, that maybe you know, price per square foot makes more sense for us to build those out. The cost of building right now for us doesn't, you know, it kind makes of sense, outweighs yeah. the pros and cons right now. But in the future, that is something we're definitely considering is omitting the parking altogether and expanding the storage. Right now, I think the demand is higher for parking.
Mm-hmm.
We have a little bit higher vacancy rates for our storage spaces, but there's a huge demand for the flex warehouse spaces. So I can see that as well. And I really do like the commercial space just because the potential for like triple net leases yeah. and things like that yeah. to cut back on your taxes and things of that nature, I really like. And we have some experience already with commercial warehouse ownership just because two of our gyms, we own mm-hmm. the warehouses for that. So it's kind of like something we're comfortable with. And aside from that, they really had no marketing prior to this. We put new signs out on the road. We inherited the property manager mm-hmm. from the previous owner. We kind of just kept her on to get us over the initial hump.
Right.
And because the tenants were familiar with her, but we recently kind of cut ties with that just because.
So you fired her.
she was excellent, and honestly I would have loved to keep her, but the previous owner had the ability to pay her a lot more than we're yeah. willing to for what she was doing. So we've gone to fully automated situation, like our locks, a new tenant rents online, they get a code for the lock, they take the lock off, they put it in a lock box, they put their own lock on, so it's contactless now. So we're saving a lot of money in terms of that.
Is that a special type of lock with like an app or something?
There are special types of locks. We do not have those. Uh-huh. That is something down the road we would like to have. It's a definitely more sophisticated piece of equipment. And, you know, you can also include your gate
interesting.
Software so that you can automate it in that capacity. Our gate currently we have to give each tenant a new code every time. But, you know, there's pros and cons to both. It's just how much money you want to spend yeah. on it. And we will probably switch all of our tenants over to triple net leases as well.
Mm-hmm.
They currently are not on that, but we'll get there eventually.
Yeah. Yeah. That's so interesting. So, okay. So that was your first deal that got mm-hmm. you into this realm of self-storage, but it wasn't enough, right?
No.
So what was the next deal? How did you get to it? You kept cold calling. You guys continued to build out the acquisitions process.
Yeah. So, I continued cold calling. I got one deal, or not one deal, sorry. I had one seller in Leesburg area who was interested in selling, but wanted to get, you know, some tests done on their facility. They wanted to get, you know, it appraised and all kinds of stuff like that. So we knew we wanted this one property, but the timeline was just taking a really long time. So we continued searching. We weren't sure if that was going to go through or not. So in the meantime, we found a property in the same area, Leesburg, that was on Crexy. And it was like one of those too good to be true deals.
Yeah.
We were like, why aren't they charging more for this? Uh-huh. So my husband got on the phone with the broker, immediately focused on building a relationship with him, and came to realize that the broker really had no experience in self-storage. He was a residential and commercial, but nothing involved with storage. And so he really had no idea what he was selling. Naturally, he got a ton of interest in the property.
Of course.
And the sellers decided to increase their price.
Mm-hmm.
I'll say it as nicely as I can. And the deal still worked at that price. It was a little bit more than what we were interested, but we were hoping that maybe we could just get it under contract if they chose us and try to figure out, you know, something along the way. So that's kind of been our MO, is just like, you know, fake it till you make it, like figure it out. We'll do whatever we have to do to figure it out once we get it there. Mm-hmm. But so they had probably 8 or 9 offers on the table, and we brought an offer for seller financing, and we gave them 2 different options for finance terms. And they were business owners. They didn't necessarily need the money. Mm-hmm. And so even though our offer wasn't the highest offer, they ended up choosing ours. And so we got that under contract with seller financing. After we started digging more into the numbers, especially considering the occupancy was extremely, extremely low, like 30% or even less. we decided to put it out there in our group to see if anybody was interested in partnering with us on it. Mm-hmm. And so somebody in our storage group who had no experience with storage yet, but wanted to kind of get their feet wet, offered to partner with us. And so we structured a deal where we took an acquisition fee and an asset management fee instead of an ongoing like monthly fee. Yeah. We took it as an upfront equity fee. And so he actually put down all of the down payment. And then as the operators, we maintained 60% of the property equity and he has 40%, even though we've put essentially no money into it.
That is so cool.
Yeah. It was just like a creative way to do it. I think for us, the numbers didn't make sense for us if we were planning on putting in a significant chunk of money for a down payment, yeah. But it still cash flows and it's a long-term buy and hold for us. So I think down the road, it's a great opportunity for us to continue practicing our, you know, asset management operations, that type of stuff. It gives him some experience in the field. And then, you know, this is Leesburg is a really rapidly growing area. So it's going to be a great property down the road to have.
How far apart is the first facility from the second facility?
They're not super close. They're about an hour, but, we like Leesburg because the other property that we have under contract right now, they're like a couple miles apart.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So those two facilities are right next to each other. So you can't necessarily, you know, the economies of scale aren't necessarily there mm-hmm. for Leesburg and not Titusville.
Yeah.
No, but, you know, the two Leesburg facilities are.
Yeah. Okay. I want to break down this offer you made for this for the on market property. So mm-hmm. what is it that so many people get tied up? And, you know, I see this even on my own team. We have like an in-house agent and we've got a couple other people that are in charge of making offers and they make so many assumptions up front that they're already putting it out there that they're like, no, I'm not going to get my offer accepted. There's like 15 other people making offers accepted. But experience tells us that we need to stop assuming and we just need yeah. to put it out there. We have no yeah. idea why or why not someone is going to choose our offer, especially if it being the highest offer is not always what's the most important, right? Like yeah. I just picked up a property off the MLS last week that was listed at $580,000 and I got it for $495,000. There's
awesome.
Like, even in my market, that's not realistic, right? Like it's almost offensive for me to offer that far below, but it's what I can afford to pay for the property. It's what I think it's worth and nobody else made an offer. So therefore my offer looks pretty good when it's the only one on the table. I'm very right. curious, like, why do you think they accepted your offer as a seller financing offer versus I'm sure they probably had other, like, you know, traditional financing offers.
So, I think part of our background being in the gym setting has really parlayed well into real estate because mm-hmm. it's a relationship business and you're ultimately just solving problems for people.
Exactly.
So, in this situation in particular, the fact that my husband spent so much time and energy talking to the broker, really trying to understand who the buyers were, mm-hmm. what their story was, what do they do outside of this? Do they own other businesses? Do they need the money? And that was ultimately why we came up with the seller financing option, was because if they don't need the money, typically, you know, a savvy business person isn't going to want to spend or, you know, pay the taxes on something, especially if they don't need a big chunk of money in the bank. You know, you figure out what they're comfortable bringing in every month. You know, what are their expenses? Mm-hmm. What do they need to cover for that? And then go from there. So you're ultimately just really trying to solve the problem. And we came to find out through a lot of digging and learning with these sellers that they essentially gave up on this business. So they had another business that was occupying the majority of their time. Mm-hmm. They didn't have the energy or the bandwidth to deal with tenants and things of that nature. So, you know, they had people who were there and they weren't even paying for months on end. They weren't collecting any money from people. You know, they were severely under market. The doors on the facility all need repair, you know, paint, everything. It just kind of went to shit.
So this is the true essence of a tired landlord.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, you know, we're solving that problem for them. We're taking it off of their, you know, load, mm-hmm. but we're also not tasking them with a boatload of like taxes. They got a little bit of money up front. And then, you know, we have a 5-year balloon with no prepayment penalty. So we'll refi in two or three years, maybe 1 year, depending, and be done with them. and be on our way. So
yeah, for the listeners, explain what the benefit of getting the seller financing up front and then doing a refi later is. Break that down for anyone listening that's not familiar with self-storage.
So the seller financing up front is really beneficial because you don't have to jump through the financing hoops. You don't have to qualify through banks. You don't have to, you know, submit all these documents and all that kind of stuff that takes months and months and months. If we look back at the Titusville deal, that was under contract for 6 months before we closed because SBA has so many hoops to jump through. Every single turn you make, they're like, oh, well, you need to turn this paper in. Oh, I turned that in 6 months ago, remember? And they lose paperwork. You know, there's their requirements change on a weekly basis, daily basis sometimes. And honestly, it feels like it's just based on what their attitude of the day is.
Yeah.
So the seller financing is really beneficial, especially if you come across people who are tired landlords and they're just like, oh, I just don't want to deal with it. They don't want to be bothered by, you know, bank, because they have to provide just as much documentation as you do.
Yeah.
And a lot of times, like SBA, they're going to want, you know, like the all of the testing done, you know, the environmental tests, like just scores of different, you know, tests and requirements that aren't going to be required. They will be required when you go on refi, but hopefully at that point, you've not only increased your occupancy, you've increased your rates, the facility looks better, you know, everything is tip top and you've had time to get, you know, all your ducks in a row with documents. So that's why we hope to refi in a couple of years. So then we'll get a mortgage under our name. We can take equity out because hopefully all of the value add strategy that we've implemented has increased the value of the property. Mm-hmm. And then we can take that money and roll it into a new property. Or, you know, you don't necessarily have to take out the money if you don't want to, but I think it's a much safer and more secure route to go. And then the other benefit is for the seller that you can kind of pitch to them is that they can defer their taxes. So, you know, there's a lot of questions about 1031 exchanges and things of that nature. You could go the 1031 exchange route, but again, most of these seller or storage facility owners are older mom and pops. They're later in their years. And that's a lot of work to figure out in like the 45 day time frame that you have or whatever it is to get that going. So I think there's a lot of benefits to seller financing.
Yeah, I agree completely. So I think it's just so interesting what you're able to do with seller financing as an option, right? So, and with this deal, you also brought no money down. You got an investor to bring your down payment that these sellers requested upon the seller financing. So you're essentially in this for nothing. In a couple of years, you'll actually be able to pull cash out. You'll be paid for doing this deal instead of putting money in to do the deal.
Right. It's essentially an infinite cash on cash.
Yeah.
So to speak.
But. Yeah. So, I mean, what's your goal in the next like 12 to 24 months? Like, where do you want to see this transition to? Do you want to keep going and just finding facilities and taking them down? Are you going to scale out an acquisitions team and start doing this on a larger scale? Like what's the vision?
That's an interesting question. And I've been really kind of probing myself. And my husband and I have really been trying to spend a lot of time figuring that out. Our initial goal when we started back in January was to get three deals, to own three deals by the end of the year. And we're set to close on our third deal before the end of the month.
I wish we had a victory bell. Ding, 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 ding,
ding, ding, ding, ding. Yeah, it's super exciting. So we will have achieved that goal. And from there, I don't necessarily know yet. I know that we have a certain amount of money that we would like to be making a month. And, you know, these facilities, once we get them up and running, plus our gym income, we need to kind of like take a step back. And we've been really questioning ourselves on like, how much money do we really need to be making a month to get us living the way that we'd like to live?
Yeah.
You know, how much do we want to be able to give? How much do we want to be able to provide for our kids? Like, where do we need to put all of our money in order to live the way we want to live? And we recently purchased some property up in Ohio, which is where we're from originally. And it's definitely,
is this the hunting land?
Yeah.
Oh
yeah.
Man, I love this one too.
So yeah, this is a cool deal too. But it's really caused us, being up there has caused us to really question what we want to do, what we want out of life, how fast paced we want to be, and where we want to be living. And that's a tough one for us too, because we love living in Florida. We love our gyms. But we also do miss kind of our roots. The cool thing is that we have a gym up in Ohio as well. So it's our property up there is located to that business. So it's not like we'd be stepping away altogether, but we've been toying with the idea of dual, I guess, living opportunities and trying to figure out what do you do with your kids and their schooling? And do I homeschool? Do I want to homeschool? Do I, you know, do I want to be operating an acquisitions team? Do I want to be growing this? I think we definitely would like to get a couple more storage facilities under our belt. And I've been also working in acquisitions for larger properties to potentially syndicate with Bar Down. And so that's really cool. And you know, I don't know. We'll just see where it goes. And we don't have any like rules.
And that's the true definition of freedom, right? Like you get to decide what it is that you want to do. And not a lot of people have that choice, but I feel like that choice came from the discipline that you had early on in life, right? Like you decided, okay, I'm going to go own gyms. You wanted to be a business owner. You made that a successful business. Then you decided you want to go into self-storage. You took the action required. You had the discipline, which isn't easy. So you took the hard path up front and now your life has become easier because your choices have given you this freedom. I love that. I think this story is really inspiring. So, well, cool. Let's move on to the last couple questions of the show. Do you have any books or podcasts that you'd recommend to people who maybe want to get into self-storage or want to follow a path similar to yours?
Well, I think I would be remiss if I excluded Rich Dad, Poor Dad. I'm sure that's the number one answer that comes across. But, you know, it truly is the brain shift. You know, if you're thinking one thing about money, you read that book and you're like, okay, I was completely going the wrong direction. Yeah. It will completely shift your mindset when it comes to money and all of the books that follow that. But I would say the book that truly got us going in the storage route was Profit Like the Pros by Ken Corsini. And I love that book and I always recommend it to people because especially people who are newbies, not sure what asset class they're interested in. It basically takes, I don't even know how many, like 15, 20 people who are all in different asset classes in their best deal. So you're like, oh my God, I didn't even know you could flip land. I didn't know you could do short-term rentals. I didn't know that, you know, all these different opportunities. And that was what flipped the switch for us with storage. So I always think that's a great book.
Yeah, I love that. And then what about a podcast? Any podcasts that you like to follow regularly that give you good advice?
Well, of course I listen to the Self-Storage Income podcast. I love your podcast because, you know, financial freedom is something that we're very passionate about and obviously always seeking, but we always just listen to Bigger Pockets Rookie and Bigger Pockets podcast. Just that's how we got started being interested in real estate in general. So, you know, it would be a lie if I said those weren't pivotal, you know, podcasts.
For us. I definitely agree. You know, Bigger Pockets helped me get started. It's a great podcast to start because it's for me, I feel like they hit so many broad topics. Like you learn about a bunch of different industries, but then for me, it was like really helpful to niche down on what I wanted to go into. And that was harder to find on Bigger Pockets, but like I went into acquisitions. Yeah. So what was it? TTP, the TTP podcast or whatever. It's Wholesaling Inc. There we go. That's the one I really like, but, okay. Yeah. Last question. What is your definition of financial freedom?
I hate to take your answer, but it's honestly, it's just the freedom to choose. I want the freedom to choose if I work today. I want the freedom to choose if I answer my phone. I want, or to turn my phone off for the day. I want the freedom to, you know, run around in the yard with my kids or work all day if I want to. I think that, you know, having the opportunity to choose how hard or how little you work is really the ultimate, you know, freedom for me.
I definitely agree with that. Yeah. And I think it's so interesting too. I think the misconception a lot of people have about like chasing freedom or financial freedom or whatever it may be is that it has to do with materialistic things. But the one consistent thing I've heard from a lot of our guests is that it almost never has to do with materialistic things. It has more to do with choice. And I think that choice really does come from being disciplined and making hard choices up front so that life can be easier on the back end. Which is an interesting concept. It's not what our society teaches by any means. So cool. Well, hey, I have a feeling that people probably want to get a hold of you. If people do want to reach out to you, what is the best way they can get a hold of you?
You can find me on Instagram. It's @JenHudson. And if, you know, I work in multifamily as well as storage. And if you're interested in fitness or nutrition tips,
hit
me up.
Cool, sweet.
I can direct you.
Do you have a different link for anything fitness or nutrition wise that I can put in the show notes?
Yeah, I mean, I could link my gym. That's one central website. And if you're interested in like nutrition coaching or anything like that.
Cool. Yeah, we'll get that. You. We'll get all those links in the show notes. So Jen, thank you so much for taking the time to come on and teach our listeners about self-storage. This was a really great episode and I had a lot of fun.
Thank you so much. I had a blast.
All right, guys. Thanks for tuning in to this week's episode of the Chasing Freedom Podcast with Noah and Jeff.
Please subscribe to our YouTube channel in the show notes below. And if you ever want to get a hold of us, feel free to do it via our Instagrams. You can also follow us for our funny content on TikTok.